Well, I'm wearing my African shirt this morning as a reminder, because Peter talks about us and addresses us in Scripture. He calls us sojourners and pilgrims. We're on a journey. And a lot of our journey tells us about walking. We are to walk in the light, walk in the truth, walk circumspectly, walk according to the worth of God, walk according to His ways, walk in the Spirit, walk in love, and walk by faith. So this morning's going to be a little different. It's not necessarily a Bible study that we will be in the Scriptures deeply. But I'm going to share kind of the Scriptures of my faith walk. And I pray that as my journey is revealed, a little bit shared this morning, you're both encouraged, but also then just challenged in your own walk as well. Because that's what testimonies are supposed to be doing, is to not just a story, not just, oh, wow, look what I did, or look who I was, look what I did. That's not a testimony. Testimony is, look what God did there. There should be a testimony, should be a standing stones of ministry all the way through what God has done. And so for me, as you can tell, I don't talk like what you guys don't talk down here. I'm from New York originally. I was born in Yonkers. Yonkers, New York, right outside the city. And I lived there for the first 17 years. Which means I talk in fast mumbles. I don't have much of an accent because I'm no longer there. I love bagels and pizza. I do not put cheddar or cottage cheese in my Italian food. That, I believe, is the 11th commandment. I just can't prove it, but I believe it is. And I had this intense, deep animosity towards Dallas Cowboys. There's some things that God's working out of me, and He said that's not one of them that needs to be worked out. That's one of the things that could stay, so that's good. But we live basically in a township about 45 minutes from New York City, a place called Fields, New York. On the outside, we had the American dream, two-story house, two-car garage, two cars, two dogs, two kids, swimming pool, two VCRs, because you can copy tapes to tape VCRs, Atari video game. There is a statute of limitations on that, right? I hope. But I had the Atari video game system. I'm dating myself now. You know, we had friends, we had boats, we had et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Except it wasn't the American dream. And I asked you to turn to Matthew chapter 4 because it's one of those first areas of my life that really speak into what my life was like. Matthew 4, verses 13 through 16. And after leaving Nazareth, Jesus came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the sea, in the regions of Zebulun and Naphtali, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who sat in darkness have seen a great light, and upon those who sat in the region, a shadow of death, light has dawned. This is that region. So as you can see in the map there, you have the Dead Sea, and then you have the Sea of Galilee, and the region that's circled in red is the region of Naphtali and Zebulun, a major area where Jesus ministered. This is one of the focal points of where he was, between where these two tribes were located. This area referred to as the Gentile of the Galilees, or Galilee of the Gentiles. And Josephus reported there was over 200 villages that were Jewish there, about 15,000 each. So you had this Gentile-Jewish clash of cultures in this region. 200-plus Jewish villages, Gentile-dominated region. Very conflicted area with these cultures, and its names mean that. For example, the word Zebulun means habitation. Zebulun means the habitation, but Naphtali means struggle or wrestling. So you had this area where there was great habitation between these two cultures, but a great intense struggle or wrestling that was going on at the time. And Matthew was inspired by the Holy Spirit to reference Isaiah in this area where there was a great darkness, a shadow of death for so long. And this region was considered dark. They had a lot of dark history because of all the regions in this area, they got conquered first and the most often by all the invading armies. They were always being overtaken by somebody. But on top of that, they were far away from Jerusalem, so they didn't have the Jewish influence of daily life. It was difficult for them to even travel down there for the feast days. So there was a darkness spiritually in the fact that it was a mixture, Gentile faith, Samaritan faith, Jewish faith, and it was far away from their center point, so it was like they didn't have a connection to Jerusalem anymore. So these struggles, the mixed religions, the darkness, This was the kind of the taste of what my life was like. But then it was a coming dawn at one point. But for a season, my life struggled like Zebulun and Naphtali. As I've shared before, a part of that religious struggle is me being Jewish, growing up at least in a Jewish type of home, and I'll explain more of that. What that meant was that my mom was Episcopalian, my dad was Jewish, so we had a menorah in front of the Christmas tree at Christmas time. And that was pretty much the extent of, we never went to church, maybe synagogue once in a while, but that ended. So my dad's family, mom's family, didn't really get along. There was in my sixth grade year, I got into a fight at the synagogue on Yom Kippur. Someone had to atone for their sins, and I helped them. Seventh grade, eighth grade, I had my bar mitzvah. I failed Hebrew school in sixth grade. I couldn't get all the stuff together. So eighth grade, then my bar mitzvah came along. And as I shared at the Passover, it kind of went like this. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, kama se yama me yama pei dori tu. And if you recognize it, I had to put some Spanish in there because I didn't know enough Hebrew to finish up the bar mitzvah ceremony. So the rabbi looked at me and I just continued going. And I really wanted to make a money symbol. You want to get paid, let's get this done and over with and we get out of here. But that was the mixture of stuff. That was just one aspect of the darkness I dealt with, was this mixture of this religious American background. Oh, I was basically a semi-typical American Jewish person, semi-typical American Christian person with a left background. And all I knew growing up, that Jesus was a Jew. That was the extent of my background. But our family was kind of really messed up. This is the background of the letter here. My dad worked too much. My mom drank too much. I have an unknown half-sister somewhere in the world that was given up for adoption before I was born. And this portion of a letter here was written by my true grandmother from prison because she was there because she murdered my grandfather while trying to shoot my mother. And so all I knew for a grandparent was my great aunt and my great uncle. And so in the background, I had this here. There's New York Mafia connections in the background. There's other things like that. There's lots of stuff that's... When my daughter asked about a genetic tree for a college project, I gave her all the examples. You need what can happen in the genetic tree? I had it. If that wasn't enough, though, I was into pornography at the age of 10. The day after my bar mitzvah, literally the day after my bar mitzvah, I declared atheism at the age of 13. By the age of 14, I was managing a pool hall on weekends. And I started drinking at the age of 16. Age of 17, I got involved with some occult stuff. And by the age of 19, I was heavily involved in New Age, Shinto, mystics, all that stuff there. And interestingly enough, the New York State curriculum, we had a book we had to read called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Anyone remember that book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, from reading in school? That was written by the father of the New Age movement. So I got introduced to that in eighth grade, came full circle again in college, right outside that. So I was the typical, non-typical young man who walked in darkness. That was my struggle. That's why the Zebulun and Naphtali speak to me in that region, because of that. I was suicidal, angry, bitter, frustrated, mad, rage. You name all the emotions that were involved in those things, that's what I was. And that's the kind of person I was growing into at that point. And I wrote a song, I wrote a poem at that point called True Believer. And it kind of expressed everything I felt about it. It was like, and here's just part of it. Where are you, God? Your workers deafen my ears with the endless babble of sin, hell, and punishment. But I've yet to hear from the Almighty you. They say you live within the air, the land is seen even in me. I breathe, not yet choked in your essence. I watch the rivers of melted rock flow without your bubbled flesh. I dive deeper than the sun where even your light can't penetrate. And through me, my blood moves by the force of my heart, not yours. Not you and your footprints in the sand, your bleeding portraits of your most holy son, your promise of the promised land. But he's thou Lord, your protector and creator. Not me, I come from the trees. Thou art a sinner and you'll be punished for your sins. Oh, and burn in hell, I suppose. Oh, you will burn, and only then will you understand the light. You know what, though? I waded through the shadows to accept his light, rising from the pits to which I fell, only to learn that his blessings pile high, and I would live only after I died. So that was where I was. And so that kind of background, that kind of struggle, wrestle inside internally all the way through. And I took all that baggage to college. You know, you'd only be as cool as me if you had a Firebird. You'd only be cool if you had white-rimmed, white-wall tires on the Firebird, and you could wear pants like that and make it work. So that's the kind of cool I was. But I took all that to Eckerd College. I went to a place called Eckerd College to study marine biology in St. Petersburg, Florida, formerly known as Florida Presbyterian College. Interesting choice for an atheist Jewish person. I looked at it as my escape. And my freshman class, we had a class called Western Heritage. Everyone was required to take it. And I had to buy a Bible. So I went to the bookstore, bought a Bible, and paid bookstore prices for a Bible, which I thought was ridiculous if I could go to the hotel and get one, but I didn't realize at the time. So I got to there, and my first assignment was just to read in the Bible. I returned it after a few days because it was broken. I didn't know how to use this word/chapter/number system. Where were the page numbers in our assignments? We had to read something like Genesis something something. I had no idea how to look that up. I thought I was a pretty smart kid, but I couldn't figure that out. To show you how non-religious my background was, when they hung the sign of John 3:16 at football games, this is not a joke, I literally thought it was a guy named John on the football field. I just could not figure out why they had three numbers. You know, like, I could not figure out it was John 3 and 16 was some kind of special thing. I really had no idea. All my life growing up, I just thought John 3, and it wasn't until after I became a Christian one day in church service, I was like, oh, John, I got it. My faith walk continued, and Romans 1 is a pretty good place to go to for this section of my life. Romans 1, 20 through 21. And this season of life was a paradox to me. So in Romans 1, verses 20 through 21. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, that they are without excuse. Because they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. I mean, come on, what was a 13-year-old guy who was supposed to know about God? But he, you know, the day after my bar mitzvah, I said, I want nothing to do with this religious hypocrisy of religion and stuff. I want nothing to do with any of that. I want to become just a non-believer. And I was. But it was a paradox because there was both a recognition that I knew something was greater than me in this world, but I was fighting hard and pulling against it with everything I got. Greg Laurie once used a Chinese proverb in one of his harvest crusades. He said, if you take a pack of dogs, you throw a stone, the one that gets hit is the one that yelps. The one that barks the loudest is the one that got hit. I was the one barking the loudest. And then somewhere along the way, I was getting hit. Because somewhere in this season of my life, I shifted from atheism to agnosticism. Atheism means you believe there is no God. Agnosticism says you don't know what you really believe. And I kind of fell into that category. But there was also a not-so-subtle shift towards antagonism against the Christian faith. And I don't know necessarily why it was the Christian faith. Well, I do now, but not then. I would debate Christians on campus. If you've ever seen the movie God's Not Dead and the professor there, that was my attitude towards Christians on campus. So I was a fun person to be around sometimes. But as this point in the verse says, the foolish hearts were darkened. My foolish heart was darkened. And I started to go down a road of self-pity, narcissism, which became very self-centered, and hedonism, very self-pleasured. I wanted for me because I deserved it because look at the cards I was dealt with as a kid. I wanted more from life than what I had now. And that was my mentality. So I did a lot of things in college. I joined a death metal band called Anarchy Against Chaos. See, death metal band against Anarchy and Chaos. That was me on the left with long hair. I played beach volleyball way too much. That's why I had C's and D's one semester. And I also partied a lot. But one interesting thing about my drinking life in college is I was never going to become like my parents. I said I was going to draw a line and said I was going to only do this for fun and nothing else. I'm not going to drink because I feel sorry for myself and all that. So that became things there, and I had a good time in college. I also found my major. Let's see there. Here it is. I became a marine biologist and started studying a thing called seagrass. It's not seaweed, seagrass. Please don't insult me there. But then I became on a fast track in the marine life sciences. I worked at the Florida Marine Research Institute. I did a senior thesis on seagrass research. I worked with one of the top marine biologists in the country. I had a chance. I published a paper before I even graduated. So this was a fast track of my career taking off and getting noticed and being part of what I was doing there. I was really on the up and up. I also declared my independence, in a sense, from my parents. I had a chance to go to Russia for 18 days for $1,200, get college credit. They said no. I said I wasn't asking if you were letting me go. I was paying for my own trip. I was going. And so I did. And went to Russia, went to St. Petersburg, went to Kiev, went to Moscow, did some foolish things there, found out a secret Russian base that was not on the map. Not a good thing to do, to show up in the cab of secret Russian bases. But it was one of my times I started to break away. But then something also happened. I found the cross. Not the cross, a cross, literally. While I was walking around one night on campus, I found that little cross in the lower left corner there. And I had this graphic arts class that we were supposed to make images and shades and stuff like that. And why was a Jewish atheist playing around with a cross? I have no idea. Not back then. And so I would do these images, things with these images of the cross and Stairway to Heaven type things, all embedded into my work. And I had no idea why. And I was even asked the question one day, why? And then I got introduced to an artist named Salvador Dali. And, of course, he has a lot of religious imagery in his work there. And once again, I couldn't explain to you my attraction to it back then. But a lot happened. My grandparents on the left, well, my daughters, their middle names are named after, Mary. These are not my real grandparents. This is my great-aunt, great-uncle, but they were my grandparents for all practical purposes. They passed away during that time. And they were the ones that helped just keep my feet stable in a lot of ways. But during my senior year in college, three of my friends committed suicide, including my best friend from college in the middle. He was the one who gave me the Satanic Bible. So, of course, it raised a lot of questions of what was starting to happen in my mind there. And then I began to seek salvation in relationships. I said, you know what? I know how to get success in life and be satisfied. I wasn't caring about power and money and stuff. I wanted family. I wanted a wife, I wanted kids, I wanted a family, a solid structure. I wanted to have everything I never had growing up. That became my God and my idol, my focus. We will follow somebody in our lives. We will seek something somewhere along the way. No matter what season we're in, we will always seek a God to lead us and direct us. Even without no gods, I still will find something to lead and direct me. Whether it's sports, whether it's power, it's prestige, it's honor, something is going to direct my life. In this part of the season of my life, it was going to be my relationships. I had a 4-year relationship. We were engaged. Well, sort of. We had a date, but we didn't have a ring. But we had, you know, so I guess it's engagement. And then we broke it off. I began a whole series. I spiraled even more down that hedonistic, narcissistic pathway of self-blame. A good friend of mine on the right, John, I was so entrained into getting what I wanted, I took his girlfriend and then had a relationship with her for a season. And I was like, that's what I want to have this. It didn't end well. I wound up sleeping in a hotel room during my MS qualifiers, master's qualifiers, and just living on my own at that point. But in the middle of that, that darkness that engulfed the region of Zebulun and Naphtali, where Isaiah 9 talks about the light shining, beginning to shine, God started to shine through all these things. There were a couple girls on college campus that were Christians, but they lived it. You and our friend was killed, they lived it. And they were the example. And I always remembered them years and years afterwards. I remembered who they were. And I remembered their actions and behaviors. The friend that took his girlfriend, he wound up forgiving me. So much so, he let me borrow his car to go drive to see my dying grandmother. You know, and he wasn't a Christian. He was an atheist. But the idea of forgiveness began to wrap, start slowly seeping in. God took someone so messed up and hardened as I was and said, I'm going to find ways to get you. I'm going to find ways to speak your language. I'm going to find ways that's going to minister to you in such ways you're not even going to see it coming. Because if you're one of those people, if you see me coming straight at you, you're going to dodge away. So I'm going to hit you with the back door. And that's how the Lord started to work in my life there, through the back door. And there were tons of other things happening, but then I met someone. In Proverbs 21, we're not going to stay there long, we don't have to turn there, but 21:1, a king's heart in the hand of the Lord, like rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, like rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. God is in control, even when everything appears to be out of control. I think it's a verse to remind us today in our world that we're in. God is still on the throne. He hasn't abandoned it and left it alone. He's still in control, no matter how much we feel like things are out of control. And he turned my heart all right, and life began to make a major shift. You see, let's see if you can track with me here. My ex-fiancé's college roommate was getting married. I was emceeing the wedding. My ex-fiancé was going to be at the wedding. Another ex-girlfriend was going to be at the wedding. So I had two exes at this wedding. I needed a date because I was the lead guy in the wedding. I was emceeing it. I was in the groom party. I was the groomsman. I was everything. I needed a date. And everything fell through. And I was a teacher at the University of South Florida at the time, so I couldn't date anyone at the university. And so when you're in a university town, you can't date anyone at the university. You got a problem. And so I was like, okay, you know what? And my friend looked at me and said, hey, why don't you try something? I said, okay, this is not a message to any singles out here today. So back then, we did not have eHarmony. We had personal ads in local papers. So I put one out. Okay, so this is a funny act of desperation for a date, but at the same time, God's starting to move. Only ad I ever put out. Only one person answered that ad, and she's only answered one ad in her whole life. And so we were sitting at a little bar one day, and she looked at me and says, you know what I want to do? And I looked, and this is how connected we were already. I said, you want to go skydiving? She goes, how in the world? I said, I have no idea. So we went skydiving. You want to increase your prayer life real fast, jump out of a plane. It really works. You want to increase your life even faster, crawl out of a plane and hold on to it, then let go. You know? But it was during this time that it says in the scripture here, the people who have seen the darkness have seen a great light, and upon whom sat in the region a shadow, that the light has dawned. This for myself and my life was the dawning of light coming through. And, you know, she was a churchgoer at the time, but wasn't a Christian. But she didn't realize that at that point. And so she told me she'd only marry a Christian. And at that time, our definition was a one who goes to church. I said, I'll go to church and give my kids a chance to make a decision I never had. Because I already made my decision. I can't undo it, right? So ignorant. Foolish. So we started to go to a couple churches. We got kicked out of one church, sort of. Well, we tried sitting down in the seats over here, but they were saved. So we sat over here. They were saved. Literally, we had to move three or four times before we could actually find seats that are saved. So if anyone ever saves seats in this church, not happening. But so there was one Sunday I said, I'm going to go by myself to prove I'm not going because of her. So I went that Sunday. I even went to Sunday school that day. I went to Sunday school, and they were having a conversation. Now, the room was split with an aisle in the middle, and they had two sides. The room was split. I said, okay. I raised my hand during the conversation. I said, I have a question. What comes first, the fear of God or the love of God? This side of the room erupted in fear of God. This side of the room erupted in love of God. And there was people were standing, yelling at each other, talking. It really was like a wrestling match all the time. It got heated. They're back and forth, and the pastor walks over to me and goes, son, next time you have a question, please ask me personally. I never did get an answer that day. What comes first, the love of God or the fear of God? But, you know, so I was starting to look for answers. And I go to Matthew 17:20 because this is where I was at. In the first part of this verse, Matthew 17:20. During this season, I had no idea. I'm still clueless. We went to several churches. I wasn't hearing anything. Nothing was joining in. Nothing was getting to my heart. In 17:20, Jesus said, because of your unbelief, for surely I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed. Now, I know the reference to this and the rest of this, but this was what I had. If there was someone smaller than a mustard seed, this was me coming into it. And classic God form, I'm in Miami. A friend of mine in the science degree program, she was a friend of mine from Eckerd College. She and I had been big back friends since 1988 when we were both freshmen at Eckerd College. We both were in the Marine Science program. We went to University of South Florida together. Then we went to Florida International University together. We just traveled the same road, just that we didn't realize it. We just kept intersecting. God kept bringing this person in my life. And she's like, you've got to come to church with me. And she had this bubbly, you got to go to church with me. I'm like, I don't know you. She goes, yeah, come. So we went. We actually raced to church that morning. She beat me by driving over the hedge and got into the parking lot. But it was that service that day, I quietly got saved in my seat. I don't even know what the pastor said. I don't even know the time of prayer. But it was one of those times where he just said, if you want Christ in your life and you want to stop living for yourself, this is what you do. And to me, you have to understand, I was so insignificant of a point in my life to me. Really, that's so funny saying that. But at the time, it was so insignificant of a point in my life, I chose purposely never to remember the date. And to this day, I can't tell you the day. I know it was January 96. Left church, and I wound up having to stop by her house with a couple of friends that were there, just I had to drop something off or whatever. And she goes, did you hear today's message? I said, yeah. I said a prayer. She goes, wait, you did what? I said, well, I said a prayer. She goes, you prayed? I said, she goes, what did you pray? I prayed that Jesus would come into my life and then become a Christian. She goes, you prayed that? Guys! She screams in the house. They all come running. Ah! I'm like, there is no big deal. It's not a big deal. Okay, remember, mustard seed. That's all I have. It's all I know. And they're all jumping around. I'm like, we're not telling anybody. I'm like, no, we're not telling anybody. This is fine. All I did was become a Christian. That's all that matters. I didn't even know what it meant, but that's what I said. And that was it. I didn't even tell her for several weeks. In fact, I remember when I told her. It was at an Olive Garden in Tampa. We were sitting down from each other. I said, oh, by the way, I became a Christian. Crying. What are you crying for? I just think I'm a Christian. It doesn't, not that big of a deal. Mustard seed. If we got married, we got married twice. I wanted to make sure I held on to her. We got married by the Justice of the Peace on March 1st, and we got married then again in May 5th at the beach. You know, so we got married twice to hold on to things. But it was that summer, I was doing marine biology research. I had 300 dives in the Florida Keys. Tough life as marine biology research. In the summer, it's the best experience. In the winter, it's work. But in the summer, I'm on the boat. We are in and out of church. We had to move. One church we didn't like so much. We're in between churches at this point. We're going to several churches. One church sang us the happy welcome song. Don't ever do that to anybody, please. You know, the whole church sat up and sang this happy welcome song and put an orange sticker on us. It was a bad experience. Another church had a business meeting right on Sunday morning, and we just couldn't find anything. So this girl from Miami told me, he goes, hey, there's this place called Calvary Chapel in Fort Lauderdale. You should go check it out. We did. The thing was huge. 3,000 people in the warehouse. So like, what is this place? Senior pastor wasn't even there that day. Some backup was pastoring. You know, those backups, you can never trust them. But, you know, he turned around and he preached a message and it was good. It was, you know, we still remember what it was about and stuff. But we just, nah. But during that summer, I was on a boat and I just had this kind of thing, okay, God, if you're God, I've been out here all summer and I wanted to see a sea turtle. I said, I just, if you're Lord of creation, and once again, he had part of the heart, it was just, if you're Lord of the creation, you should bring your sea turtle to the boat. That's all I want to do is want to see a sea turtle. We get to the next site, take us to walk to the front of the anchor, throw the anchor aboard, and here comes a sea turtle to the back of the boat. I jump in the water, and as far as from the stand to right here, this is where we actually do look at each other. Now, they don't go near boats, they run away from boats, they don't like boats. I look at him, we're near the water for about 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and he just gently swims off. I get back in the boat and go, oh, I guess you are real. Amen. And that was the first thing that God did to kind of shake my think, like my whole thinking. Like, you know, you're not just a title Christian. You're not just a person named Christian. You're going to be something. There was more to this than what you're assuming here. And I didn't assume anything because I didn't know anything. So time passes. Around October-ish, I kind of tell Tanya, I say, I want to go, let's just pick a church and just be in church during Christmas season. I've never been to church in Christmas season. Once again, just to show you how far away my faith was, there was a Christmas song that came out by Sawyer Brown called Not His Child. And it was a song about, in my estimation, and I liked the song because it was one of those sweet songs about, she must have committed adultery or did something because she has this child, but the father took the child as his own and raised him up as his own son. I had no idea it was Mary, Martin, Mary, Luke, Mary, Joseph, and Jesus was the storyline, but that was a Christmas song. I just knew it was a guy, and that's how far I didn't even see these things. But that Christmas, we're like, let's just spend Christmas at a church, please. We did. Calvary Chapel. And it was Christmas Eve, she gave her life to Christ. Coming out of a religious background, she turned around and gave her life to Christ. That's her story. But she gave her life to Christ, and in January, we started a new believers class. Now, when she told me she gave her life to Christ, I fully didn't get under that man. I thought, you already were a Christian, now you want me to be a Christian, now you really weren't a Christian, now I became a Christian, now you're a Christian? I'm not sure exactly how that worked, but okay, we're both Christians now, I guess, right? Is this how it goes? Okay, so we got this settled, we're both Christians. Is this for real? We both did it, is this right or wrong? So we took a new believers class. And we started this journey, but my journey didn't start until January 23rd, 1997. Now, I know this date because it was the date that Chuck Smith came and taught from 1 Samuel 14. It was a Wednesday night service. She wasn't there. Heathen. No, she was working. But it was a study where he talked about Jonathan, his armor bearer, going up to Gibeah and saying, we'll go, and if the Philistines call us up, that means God's calling us to be a part of this. And Chuck Smith called this a venture in faith. Now, he was sharing this in relation to the fact that Calvary Chapel Fort Lauderdale just bought 70 acres in Fort Lauderdale of property, and they're about to make a huge church move into a big area. Where do you find 70 acres of property in Fort Lauderdale? But God blessed them with that. And so January 23rd, I'm listening to this message about venturing in faith. January 24th, I open the Bible to Genesis chapter 12, and I start reading and start studying and start writing down notes. That's when God captured my heart and started taking things for it to a whole other place, was at that moment. Then came April 26, 1997. We got baptized together. We were going to get baptized in February, but the water temperature was 38 degrees. She would have gotten cold. I didn't want her to get cold. You know, that was my thinking, so that was why I chose that. But it was funny. We just felt like, no, let's wait till April. God, once again, classic God. The wedding, where I asked and needed a date, the bride, her and her husband came down to watch us get baptized, and she got baptized the same day. Classic God. So her wedding was what prompted me to ask for a date to get her to come with me. And then imagine asking her on the third date to come with me to a wedding. That's a bit awkward, but it worked. You know, and then 2 years later, she's at our baptism getting baptized. You know, God pulls these things together. So in April 97, we got baptized. That night, God tricked me. Well, he and I are going to have a little conversation when we get to heaven about this one. Because we're sitting around the dinner table, and she wants to have a Bible study with some ladies. And one of the guys speaks up and says, I'll join the Bible study too. And for some reason I knew of guys, girls, Bible study, she shouldn't be leading. I'll lead it. So I sit there and say, I'll lead the Bible study. She fell out of her chair because I told her I would not study the Bible at all until I finished my PhD work. So she's sitting on the floor going, what is he talking about, lead Bible study? He's further behind than I am. The couple swears to this day they never ever said they were going to come to the Bible study. They swear to this day they would never said they would ever do it. But we both heard it because the next week, Thursday afternoon, I'm praying on the couch like, what in the world am I doing? So this year, some of you guys will connect with this. So I got on Netscape, logged in, hopped into Alta Vista search engine, Bible studies. I pulled down a book on the life of Elijah. And I downloaded it, printed it out, and started reading it. Well, that Saturday at our house Bible study, no one showed up. Like, okay. So that Saturday afternoon, we were looking for an apartment to move. So we go off to look at an apartment. And we look at an apartment. We're not going to buy it. We start talking to the couple. Oh, you go to Calvary Chapel? Well, yeah, so do we, yeah. Hey, he looks at me and goes, do you know of a Bible study on Saturday mornings we can go to? Because we're both dying for a Bible study, but we can't go in during the night, during the week. We sort of had one. We're starting one. We can't be there next week, but we'll be there the week after. By August 97, from a renegade Bible study in Calvary Chapel, Fort Lauderdale's history, we started that. This was the group that was at our house. The couple next to me in the back row still are hosting a Bible study today, remnants of that Bible study from back then. We were the most dysfunctional Bible study group there. If you think, okay, I didn't know how to pray in public. She prayed. We had a songbook of just songs that we just put on the CD and played. I actually told the group one Sunday morning, hey, guy, one Saturday morning, there's a brand new song I want you guys to listen to. This is a brand new Christian song. Okay, great. We put the play in the CD. Blessed Assurance comes on. During this time of worship, they all start laughing. What's so funny? I heard about this Holy Laughter movie. Is this what this looks like? I said, no, you picked a hymn. I said, what's a hymn? It's not a her, but it's a hymn. It's like, I said, what's a hymn? He said, well, you picked one of the oldest Christian songs. It's been around for a long time. It's not new. I was like, oh. Had no idea. But it was during this season of our lives where Paul's admonition to the Corinthian church, imitate me as I imitate Christ, came into play. Three people came in my life, with one couple, but people came into our lives and begin to disciple me. They didn't sit me down and say, let me disciple you. They just came alongside, shoulder on shoulder, life on life, and said, I'm going to walk with you. The older couple on the left there, Bobby and Al, older Jewish couple, connected to me immediately because we knew that Jewish connection. We were at their home Bible studies. They were at the house. We were at their house. We went out together. We're still in connection with them today. They're still on my prayer team today. They helped us in so many ways grow in our faith. Simple, practical things, but just they walked alongside of us. The guy in the middle, Luis Segura, he just came alongside. And the first things we did, we played racquetball together. And just start talking about faith things, what the walk was like. He said, I see a young guy here. Let's see what he needs. The guy with the hat, Brad, as I'm in the PhD program by myself at school, a PhD doctoral student shows up. And he just has something different about him. I'm brand new at that point in time in the faith, but I know something different. So we go out to lunch one day, and I sit there like this. I'm not eating until he does. And he goes to bow. I said, wait, are you praying? He goes, yeah, well, pray for both of us. He does this while he prays. He prays afterwards. I said, are you a Christian? He goes, yeah, so am I. I know. But his way of handling faith outwardly in a naturalistic, skeptical environment began to teach me and show me and share with me. We need mentors pouring into our lives. I have people today that I still stay in contact with that pour into my life, and I'm looking to pour into it. We cannot be a static Christian. People be pouring into us. We should be pouring into someone else. If we don't have that, we're growing on our own. And growing on your own doesn't work well. Put a plant in your yard and don't water it and see what happens. We should be growing together. And during this time, once again, God begins to do some amazing little things. One night, Wednesday night at church service, a guy comes up to me, clean shaven, looking like this. He goes, Craig, right? I said, yeah. He goes, it's John. I said, yes. I was your student. I said, I've taught in three counties. Help me out here. Dreads. I was smoking weed on your last field trip. I know who you are. We had to do a search party looking for him on the island that we were on. He goes, yeah. I said, what happened to you? He goes, I got saved. We both got saved at the same church, 300 miles away from the class that we took together. God turns around and brought the two of us together, and he already was going to be a medical missionary. I said, how do you know? He goes, I said, how does God speak to you? So two young men in the faith saved about the same time, within months of each other, but he starts to coach me how God's been speaking to him about God calling him to missions. I remember sitting in my garage working on my marine biology stuff, helping get things set up for the field. He came over to help me with that, and he's just talking to me, and he's just sharing. One of his statements he said that came from one of Pastor Bob's sermons at the time was, from curious to serious, take our prayer life from curious to serious. If you're curious about what God's going to do, God will might curiously answer you. But if you're serious about this, God will answer you and direct your attention and direct you. Amen. And I was like, oh, that's a cool expression. Did you make it up? He goes, no, that was last week's sermon. You missed it, huh, heathen? Yeah. Yeah, I was like, yeah, I wasn't here last weekend. He goes, well, you can go back and listen to it. So I went back and listened to it, and that expression came out. I was like, wow, pray. We begin to pray, fast and pray. What was God doing? In Proverbs 16:9, it says, a man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. We started to try our hearts in line with what the Lord was directing in our steps. And I still remember the day. Several different things had popped up. But during that time, people started saying, you're a good teacher. After today, you may not agree with that, but you can teach the word. And once again, now this was 97. Saved January 96. Bible study started in 97. Somewhere in 97, John started coming to our Bible study. This whole thing happened. People started talking to us. So we prayed. I remember we laid diagonal on our bed. We prayed who, what, where, when, why, how prayer. We said, Lord, where are you? What do you want to do with our lives? And at the end of the prayer, I looked over at my wife. I said, it's Texarkana, and we're going to plant a church. Now, she came out of Texarkana at one point, and we made a promise in our wedding vows. I would not take her to New York. She would not take me to Texarkana. When I told her it was Texarkana, she goes, you can't take me to Texarkana. It's implicit inside those vows. Actually, what she asked me was, are you in sin? My mentoring pastor looked at the map and said, that's a bigger dot than I expected. But the Lord gave us 7 years of preparation. And during that time, opportunities started to come up. I was leading home groups. My first church was a missionary Baptist church I spoke at in Hialeah, Miami, Florida, where the race riots occurred. And they spotted us because we were the only white people in a van in town at night. The pastor literally opened up the gates to this church. It's like, you see us come down the road. He goes, not hard to spot. The funny thing is I had Coxsackie virus that day. I had 105 fever all morning. It broke at noon. I went there, and I did the teaching that day. They're singing a closing song called A Miracle Happened There. The group that was with me was laughing because they had no idea how bad of a miracle it really was. I was actually standing in front of them. I got back in the van. My temperature jumped back up. I was back up to 103, got home. That was the first time I had an opportunity to teach. Then I was invited to come to Mexico and start teaching there and the different things that were happening there as well. God began to do things, incredible things in our lives. Then he brought me into overseeing HIV/AIDS ministry. And so we began to minister to a group of people that we had no connection to in any kind of capacity. But God said, this is where I want your heart outwardly now. And I remember sitting on the front porch of an HIV/AIDS community house for the city of Fort Lauderdale and sitting out there with these guys and going, I have nothing in common with them. And God says, I'm sending you to Texarkana. You have nothing. They're more in common with you here than you have in Texarkana. So wait till you go to the South. We're going to put a Yankee in the South. You have nothing in common with them there. But here, this is where God began to just mold our hearts and shape us and change us completely. And out of that group and out of the things that we've done, God began to assemble a prayer team. We're praying in 2003, God send it, we're ready to go. During that season of praying, what are we going to do? How are we going to work? We're going to teach. And then God sends people closer than a brother. This family, not the two girls. This family was on our prayer team. And I came to him one night and said, I'm not sure what we're doing in Texarkana. I think I have a job offer. It's work at a school, but then I can't write curriculum. I feel like God's calling me to write some curriculum. But if I write curriculum, I have no income. So I could write curriculum, have no income, or I could work at a public school, or work at a private school and have income, but I have no time to write curriculum. I think that's what God wants me to do. I don't know what we're going to do. I'm not taking that job. And then we're just going to go and figure it out. And he looked at me and says, it's about time. Acts chapter 1. I said, Acts 1. He's like, yeah. The disciples went to God, we were praying, and said, God, we have this person, Matthias, we have this person here, Barnabas, don't know which one you want us to choose. Which one do you want us to choose, God, for the next disciple? Which one? And God's like, it's neither one of those. 6 chapters later, I got a guy coming up. Hang on, wait. So it was Wednesday night service. He looks at me and says, my wife and I have been praying, waiting for this moment. We have $120,000 set aside for you to write curriculum. I have no idea what the pastor said that service. I have no idea what was even taught. I don't even remember anything of that service, just sitting in my seat going. And we started the company called His Works, and we began to write curriculum. And we published a small book on writing of integrating faith into curriculum, into Christian schools, into what you teach. July 5th, 2004, we left Texarkana. We met with our pastor, and this picture brings me 2 things to mind. One, Bob Coy was my senior pastor at the time. He was my mentoring pastor. He was one that watched over us, what we were doing. He's no longer a senior pastor. He's no longer in ministry today. He fell. I hold on to this picture as a reminder, no matter how strong you are going in your faith, and what everything looks like on the outside, you're never away from it. The picture on the right, Pensacola Beach, on the way here, some random family. I met a random family at a conference. They were driving to Texarkana to plant a church. They said, here's our phone number, stop by our house. I pull up with a truck and a car with 2 kids. We pull up, they have the pot roast. We made Yankee pot roast for you, is that okay? Yankee pot roast, yes. And they said, here's some towels, go to the beach and have some time just to yourselves. I cannot remember who they are. I had no way of contacting them today, but they were one of those couples along the way that just said, I'm coming in, be refreshing, stop, take your time, and we'll continue on your journey. God does some amazing things. This was our life verse for Texarkana. Let no one despise you, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. This is how it looked. That's our ministry in Texarkana. It was a beautiful mess. I had no idea what I was doing. So huge dependence upon God. Anytime I did know what I was doing, I messed it up. We had some beautiful salvation stories. We had some ugly things happening in the church. We had beautiful things happening here and other. You name it, there's a thread all the way through that was a beautiful, beautiful mess. That's what ministry and also is a beautiful mess. When you put a bunch of people's lives together, you do see these beautiful things that God does in our lives. We have so many stories of things that God did and showed up and stuff. I led someone to the Lord before we even had church service start. Before church even started, a woman called and said, can I have a bag of groceries? I show up with the bag of groceries. She gets saved, and she doesn't even want the groceries. She goes, God will provide for me. And she goes, don't give them to me. I want to trust God with this one. I'm like, okay, that's new. But it was. But during that time, God opened my eyes to something else. God began to send me on mission trips. Bahamas, Italy, Rome, Turkey, Cuba, Mexico, Honduras, Uganda. And out of those trips, when the pandemic hit in 2020, we had a Bible study online with some friends. Ultimately, we had a Bible study from one of the women I met in Turkey, the translator. She was in Canada. Her and another woman were on the Bible study. The one woman was a Muslim who got saved in Turkey from the Bible studies. We had one of my daughter's friends from Pennsylvania, daughter's friends from Michigan, another person from Colorado, one of my former students from Little Rock, Arkansas, one of Tanya's former friends in Houston, Texas. We had another person from one of our mission trips in Australia. We were a knit group during the pandemic time. But our ministry is greater than the 4 walls of a church that we're called to be a part of. Would you turn with me to Genesis 22? This is where we're going to start closing. It was so hard going through this and trying to figure out what to share, what not to share, but these are the last few points I do want to share. Genesis 22 is called the Jewish Akedah. It's the sacrifice of Isaac. Verses 1 through 10 of Genesis 22. Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. And he said, take now your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took 2 of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. that on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to his young man, stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son, and took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. He said, here I am, my son. Look, the fire, the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself a burnt offering. Some of us in this church and churches in general follow the teachings unknowingly of the Danish theologian Soren Kierkegaard. Kierkegaard's the one that took this text and said, this is Abraham taking a blind leap of faith. And we use those expressions, leap of faith, blind leap of faith, blind step of faith. Abraham did not take a blind leap of faith, did not take a blind step of faith. He took a very reasonable step of faith. Because in Hebrews, it tells us he knew of God's ability to resurrect. And he said, if I have to sacrifice my son, God will resurrect him on the spot because that's God's promise. So there was no blindness in this, no randomness in this. This was a reasonable step of faith. In Christianity, we're not called to take blind steps of faith. We're called to take reasonable steps of faith. We know what God's calling us to do. He already knew about the possibility of the resurrection. Fast forward in 2020, 2019. We knew since about 2015, our season in Texarkana was coming to a close. We said we knew that God was choosing us to do this. In 2019, a church in Northwest Arkansas needed someone to come alongside of them and help them out. We were praying about it. The Lord was leading the opportunities happen there. And then in January 2020, the whole thing dissolved. And I remember one night I was watching the movie God's Not Dead Again for some strange reason. And the whole thing about faith came out. And the next day, Sunday morning, I'm teaching at a church we were listening to online. Faith came out. The whole idea, and God was asking me to say, choose faith. Are you going to choose to live by faith or not? Which means moving your family during a time of a pandemic, resigning your job that you have now, and seeing what I'm going to do. Are you going to choose? Actually, the way God put it to me was, are you moving for the job opportunity up there, or are you moving because I led you? Which way are you going to do? I said, well, Lord, because you're leading. Then, okay, then why do you need something to go to? Just follow my lead. Well, you put it that way, fine, I'll choose faith. So then we chose faith. We post on Facebook, I resigned my job at Arkansas High School. We post on Facebook, we're moving to Northwest Arkansas. You can see how well that did for us. It was north, yes. But I always knew something was slightly off. And if you're an NCIS fan, you'll recognize Rule 51, sometimes you're wrong. And I knew even posting this that something was slightly amiss. You see, it was north, yes. It was west, yes, but it was not going to be Arkansas. So after we posted on Facebook that we're moving, for the second time in 4 years, a friend of mine from Owasso, Oklahoma wrote something to us, says, come up to our school. And who are you? Why? She and I worked together. I was one of her mentoring teachers back in Fort Lauderdale back in 2001, too. Guy, once again, connected with people. She said, come up to Owasso. She messaged two or three times. I finally just said, okay, fine, give me your boss's name. I got her boss's name and email. I started typing in Gmail. It populated. It's not supposed to populate unless you know the person. So I do a search. It shows up. Back in 2015, a principal, an administrator of a school called me and said, hey, I'd like to have your curriculum that you wrote, that we had shelved and put away because the Lord never did anything with it. You know how God failed in his project there. He said, yeah, you wrote some curriculum, never did anything with it. Okay, fine, put it in the file cabinet. So we put it in the file cabinet, forgot about it. She goes, she was one in 2015, asked for a copy of all of it. I was like, I get to sell it. We were so bad in finances at that point, really poor, really struggling. I get to sell it. And God said, no, you give it to her for free. Okay, that's 2015, 2020, emailing her. Do you remember me? We had this curriculum. Yes, you gave it to us for free. I've had you on my radar screen ever since because you gave us the free curriculum. And we couldn't afford it at the time. She called her up, and it was a Friday. Got through the message. Hey, the job is... Can we decide by Tuesday? Yes. I get into the room. She's working. I go, Tanya? Yes. She goes, where is it? Owasso, Oklahoma. Where is that? I don't know. I didn't even know how to say Owasso right. I think we were calling it Owasso. Owasso. So we look it up, and she goes, is there a Calvary Chapel there? So we see, go down there, we see some people on stage and these diamond things behind us. I remember seeing that in the background there. Like, yeah, there's a Calvary Chapel there. Okay. Is there anything else there? So we kind of look at the school, but we knew. So Sunday I texted the boss and said, yeah, we're coming. Wednesday on the way up, we got quiet in the car. Nothing to see in the Indian Turnpike. On the way up, we're like, you know we're going to go? Yes. You know we're going to take it? Yes. All right, that's done. Get to school. And this is where God speaks up in small things. We started planning for the packing, and I needed 40 of those boxes. I was getting 5 boxes a week for 8 weeks at school. Well, school got shut down. So I went back and counted how many boxes I already had. I said, I needed 40. I looked in the back room out of the church there. We had 40 boxes already. Lord, how did we already have 40 boxes? I didn't realize I collected that many. You needed it. We get to our hotel, and I'm walking out of the car, going into the room, go to the hotel. I pray something I've never prayed before. I've never prayed before, ever. I said, Lord, let there be a gift bag waiting for us. Don't ask me why I prayed a silly prayer like that. But we prayed. Lord, I get there in the front desk. She gets signed out there. And she goes, oh, by the way, here's a gift bag waiting for you. They just dropped it off for you. I walk out to the car. I'm crying. She's like, what's the matter? There's a gift bag. I prayed. She's like, okay. Now we're here. Turn with me to 2 Corinthians 4. We've got 2 more stops and we'll close this out. I didn't know how long this was going to go. This could go 2 hours. This could go 20 minutes. Second Corinthians 4. For the record, my wife and I love being here in Calvary Chapel, Tulsa. We love our position at the school that I'm working with. We love being in this town. For us, it's full circle for a lot of things. One of the things that came up in town is when we got COVID in October 2020, so many people ministered to our family. Even my daughters noticed and said, you know, it's funny, in Texarkana, it's all we did for other people. This is the first time it's been done for us. It was one of those neat things that came along that side. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16. Therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us far more exceeding an external weight of glory. For we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are seen are eternal. For we know that our earthly house, if this tent is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made of hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed with our habitation which is from heaven. If indeed having clothed, we shall not be found naked. For we who are in the tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up by life. Now he who has prepared us for the very thing is God, has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. So we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not by sight. During in this next season of our lives that we're here and what we're doing, we don't want to be someone who does not lose heart. The outward man is perishing. Mine certainly is. I played beach volleyball last week when we went to vacation. I played with these 20-year-old studs. I held my own, but I was probably the only one walking away like this. I just went and sat in the lower section of the pool to get rejuvenated in some ways. But in 2019, I was diagnosed with Samter's triad, which is this thing that affects your lungs and sinuses and breathing. And I had COVID before people had COVID. I couldn't smell or taste anything for 8 years before anyone else had COVID. Like, oh, I can't smell or taste. This is horrible. I've been doing it for 8 years. Welcome to my life. But I'm on medication now for that. In 2021, I was diagnosed with early onset of Parkinson's disease. It is a light affliction. That's what this is. God's working these things out in my life for his glory and for his eternity. And yes, my earthly tent is being destroyed. Yes, there are days I have my groans. But my goal is to keep my eyes on the unseen and be prepared for this and the future that he has having for us. Turn with me one more section, Acts chapter 4. This is where we're going to close. You see, the journeys that we are on, there's always going to be challenges that we're going to face. Some are going to be from within, some are going to be from without. Whether we are early on in our walk or later on in our walk, what are we going to do with the challenges that God has given us to deal with? If God is our King, and if he's our Lord, and if he's sovereign, and if he's the things, and he says, this is the challenge I've allowed to come into your life, whether caused by a person, caused by a place, caused by a disease, caused by anything like that, he has allowed that to come into our lives, not to hurt us or to harm us. He's looking to work something out in and through us. All the challenges of my youth and stuff, I look back now that I was angry and stuff like that. God was using to prepare me, my heart. He didn't ordain me to go through the things I went through as a kid or anything else we've gone through. He allowed those things to be in our lives to actually minister to us so that we can be stronger in our faith, grow in our faith, be challenged in our faith, that we can be useful in our faith. As I shared on Wednesday, we are ambassadors for him. In some form or fashion, God has called us to be used for him. Just standing up here, I'm an assistant pastor. It doesn't mean I'm the most useful person in this room. I'm probably the least useful of the people in the room. Because if I get on a plane and tell someone I'm a pastor, they look at me strange. You get on a plane and say I'm a Christian, they give you a little bit more credit than they do a pastor. You don't need a title, a purpose, a name to be on stage for anything else to be used by God in any capacity. He wants every one of us to be used in some form or fashion. We look at this section of Acts 4, 13 through 16. This will be our last stop. Now, when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated, untrained men, they marveled, and they realized that they had been with Jesus. And seeing the man who had been healed standing with them, they could say nothing against it. But when they had commanded them to set aside out of the council, they conferred among themselves, saying, "What shall we do to these men? For indeed a notable miracle has been done through them. It is evident to all of us who dwell in Jerusalem, and we cannot deny it." This is where I want my life to close in Acts 4. This is the last area of my stop for scripture I want there to be my life. I'm going to live through 2 Corinthians. I'm going to live through that, but this is where I want to stop in Acts chapter 4. Where they see the boldness about my faith I'm living in. That my faith is not the result of education or training. My faith in the walk is a result of, in verse 13, they had been with Jesus. I want them to know that they say, well, look at him, look at her, because she had been with Jesus. I want people to look at me and say, the others around me have been touched by him. Look, the person healed next to him, not a physical healing, but someone in my life has been touched and ministered to because I let God use me in their life. When I was first diagnosed with Parkinson's, I didn't tell my wife right away. I didn't tell my kids right away. You know, the first person I told, besides my doctors, a student of mine and I had lunch together. I was out in Arkansas. I drove out there to see him. He was struggling in his faith. And he looked at me and said, "Everything is going perfect for you right now, going good for you right now. Everything's fine. No wonder you could speak so positively of God. You don't have a right to speak negatively of God right now because everything is so good." I looked up for a second and said, "Really?" I looked at him and said, I took my hand out and I said, "Do you see this?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "Not everything is going super well." He goes, "And you still love God with that?" I said, "Yes." He's, "Okay, tell me more." I want the person next to me to be healed because I let God use me in some form or fashion. And that people around me cannot deny my life and faith walk with Jesus Christ. Acts chapter 4, verses 13 through 16 should be everyone's closing epitaph. The only thing we should want written on our tombstone, he had been with Jesus. She had been with Jesus. They had been with Jesus. This church has been with Jesus. That's what they would need to hear from us and see from us. And I think it's just so fitting of God once again to pull it together because today we have communion. And it's an ordinance in the church that God has given to us to be able to not just partake in something that church people do, but something we get a chance to be a part of because it's a reminder of the closeness and intimacy we have with Christ.